Welcome to the Source Refresh Small Business Supply Chain Podcast. I'm your host, Chandrika Venkatraman. Join me as I talk to small businesses from across the world to learn about their supply chains, their support systems, and what keeps them moving. Today, my guest on the Source Refresh Podcast is Dan Bubniak. Dan is the CFO of Dirty Hands LLC, an industry-leading provider of contracted field sales, brokerage, and merchandising in the natural food industry. Dan is a CPA with a degree in accounting and has spent the last 6 years helping the bootstrapped Dirty Hands reach 20x growth in revenue, along with building finance, HR, marketing, technology, and operations departments. Dan, welcome to the Source Refresh Podcast. We're excited to have you here today. I shared your high-level background in my intro. What else should we know about your professional experience?
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me as well. I'm excited to be here. I think you got a bit of my intro, but I'd say a little bit deeper on that. I did start my career in accounting. I graduated from the University of Connecticut and just jumped right into it and started out at the Big Four at Deloitte in tax and auditing. So I spent about 3.5 years there. I really enjoyed it, actually. I one of the things that I had a little bit of a void on as I was growing there, though, was it was very siloed. Being in tax and then being on the audit side, I kind of saw my future was, hey, I'm gonna be in this Big Four. I'm gonna be in the accounting space. That's really the path. It's kind of hard to get out of that. You know, even if you go to private companies, you go into tax roles. And so one of the, itches I had was, how do I work my way out of this? You know, I felt like I had more of that creative, entrepreneurial spirit, but I was in kind of a sector that was a bit siloed. So, an opportunity came across with Dirty Hands, and I actually grew up with the founders here. So my best friend, Will, who's our president, was growing this business, and they had about 20 people. And he would come to me on the side just as someone with a little bit more of a financial background and ask me questions. And so I would give him some advice. And then ultimately, they offered me a job. And I think for me, why I jumped over, a lot of people, even at Deloitte, said, hey, this is a big risk. This is a small company. But why I jumped over initially was because I really did want to get out of just tax. And for me, this was an opportunity to really expand my horizons and jump into something that was more, I should say less siloed, more entrepreneurial, more hands-on, and get the experience. So I joined Dirty Hands about 6 years ago. Formerly, my title was CFO. I think I was the young kid that had this CFO title and probably puffed my chest out a little bit, but it wasn't really a CFO. When you're 20 to 30 people, I was just there to really kind of figure out finance and be the first person to kind of vouch for the company financially. When I started the family, it's a family business. The family, they are very creative, cultural, people kind of focused. And my skill set was more kind of structural, technical, process minded, right? So, when I started, it was mainly finance, but my role quickly kind of expanded much beyond that. More so, how do we build out the infrastructure of the business so that we could scale? We were fortunate to be in a place where we had a really good service model with lots of customers who loved what we did, but we also had kind of $0 in the bank account and no infrastructure to actually scale up that business. So my job, was really to kind of figure that out. And after I'd say about 6 years, we've scaled up to about 35 states with about 200 people and are kind of supporting brands through different channels of the industry, as you mentioned, in merchandising, brokering, and just helping brands grow. So that kind of brings us to where.
So that is really an exciting career path, right? Going in from, what a lot of people, including myself, would deem like fairly boring tax and accounting to building something from the ground up. So based on your experience, what would you say, when in a company's growth should they consider putting formal business functions like finance and accounting, operations, HR, like when should a business start thinking of putting those in place?
Sure. No, it's a great question. And I think one that I personally struggled with a ton as I grew this business as well, because I had no experience with it. So I'm going to speak from my experience as we grew, because we do at this point have all of those functions and leaders of those functions. So the annoying answer is that there is no answer. It's really dependent on the business, but I think there's a framework you can think of as you're making these decisions, and they all generally come from, you know, what I like to call first principles, right? So the way that I thought about it as we grew was first, what's core to your business function? You know, it's really what drives your business. Identifying that early on helps you make the decision of where to prioritize your time and money. So for us, for example, we were a service company, and, you know, for us to really get customers and to keep customers, we really needed to have a strong ops function as well as a customer service function. So, you know, we knew off the bat as a company that was bootstrapped that if we had a dollar, we needed to put a dollar in those functions, because that, we could always figure out as we scaled, okay, when do we need to add on HR? When do we need to add on, you know, technology? But what we couldn't do was get more customers if we couldn't offer an excellent service. So the first question, you know, I would ask yourself is what's really core to your business function, and make sure that you have strength there. You know, for us, for example, we really didn't invest in other functions deeply until we got to over 100 people. You know, I think the second question you need to ask yourself is, what's your risk tolerance as well? I think every business is different here, but that does ultimately and should drive your decision making. And I'll give you another example. You know, for us, we're a people business. We have people in 35 plus states. We actually had people in tons of states even early on, just the way that our business is structured. And so for us, we knew that HR was a function we also needed to invest in because of the risk around not being in compliance across the amount of states that we had. You know, should we have grown the business and not had an HR function? There could have been, you know, lawsuits, there could have been non-compliance, there could have been risks and penalties. So we knew for us, you know, based on the risk of our business, that HR was a function we had to go in on earlier, per se, than something like marketing. So we did that, right? So what's your risk tolerance? And then I think the third question is, what money do you have? And that's always kind of the biggest question. Because at the end of the day, money determines how you prioritize. And, you know, coming from a financial background, that's always how I saw it. So for us, again, we were bootstrapped. We didn't have dollars to kind of invest in places that we were unsure there was going to be a return. So that's why we went, you know, specifically deep on operations, customer service, HR and finance, because we knew those were the backbones to providing a strong service company. If we were able to raise money and had a lot of dollars to spend, I probably would have put more money into functions like sales or marketing earlier. But because we didn't have the dollars, we really needed to prioritize what was going to be core to us having a service offering that was good in the marketplace and didn't have risk to kind of hurt the business short and long term. So I would say, coming from first principles, that's the way I personally liked to think about making decisions around functions. I think the second part of that question is, when in the journey do you start to build out functions? And that's somewhat of a different question. You know, I think the way that I think about that is, there's really three phases to business, or at least that I've experienced. And up to this point, we've got, you know, like I mentioned, about 200 folks. But when we started, the business is all about having generalists. You know, it's not necessarily, you can't invest in C-suite positions. You can't invest in directors. You can't have leaders that have tons of experience, because not a lot of people are willing to take risks on you. And so when you start, what you really need is just problem solvers, people who can go out there and get their hands dirty and get into the weeds and make decisions quickly and solve problems. And so, you know, for us, that's kind of 0 to 50 people. That's where we stood, right? So we didn't bring in a ton of leadership then, because, again, we didn't have money, we didn't have the credibility, and we didn't necessarily have the time to be able to go deep on things. We just needed to move. And so you start with generalists, people that really won't break your bank. I think as you grow, you really start to hit a breaking point as an entrepreneur where you can't do everything. That was something that was really clear to me based on burning out a couple of times, to be honest, where, you know, it got to the point where this is just unsustainable. I need some other people around me. But I think the challenge in that phase where you've kind of gotten to critical mass, you know that you have something that's valuable out there, whether it's a product or a service, you have customers, and you know you have a future. I think the challenge is you still are growing so quickly that you can't really bring in specialists. You still are kind of strapped with money if you haven't raised money. And so ultimately, you have to make the decision around bringing in more generalists. So that second phase is bringing in more generalists, more people who can kind of dig the ditches, solve problems, move quickly, and who are really creative and have the ability to scale up. I think I made some mistakes in this phase because, you know, being young and without experience growing a business, it was natural for us to think, okay, let's bring some specialists on here. We did have some solid cash flow and we had the ability to do it if we wanted to. But the reality is when we brought on specialists, and this isn't everybody, but we generally failed in that because specialists come from environments where they have more of a steady kind of support system. Maybe they're not growing at a 50%, 100%, 200% rate. They're growing at a 5% rate in the role that they're in. And maybe they have access to data and information that they're making decisions on, and the support system around them is really strong. I think when you go into a startup, most of that doesn't exist. You don't have the resources to invest in tons of things. You're kind of strapped there. You don't necessarily have the support system around you or data or information around you to make decisions. And so I think, you know, what I experienced was kind of in that middle phase, bringing on specialists or really bringing on department heads was still a struggle because just the agility and ability to make decisions without the support system or resources was challenging for them. Right. So I think where we started to get our groove was finding people who were more generalists in that mid phase, who were scrappy, who didn't necessarily have 20 to 30 years of experience in a specific function, but worked more cross-functionally, had experience growing businesses from, you know, a small size to a larger size, someone who could really show that they had that experience. So that's kind of that middle phase as you grow. What I would say is, you know, the core functions that ultimately matter is based on the first point that I mentioned, what is really fundamental to your business. But, you know, the way that I saw it, and I think is relevant to every business, is finance. I think you need somebody in finance to really help you make decisions and understand your financial state, whether you raised money or whether you are bootstrapping. If you don't know where your dollars are going and where that's returning, you're going to have a really hard time making decisions. So finance is a place, you know, whether it's in that first phase or second phase, I would have somebody, period. Again, doesn't need to be a CFO, doesn't need to be a director, but needs to be somebody who's better than people around them in finance and can at least advocate for the company financially. Kind of once you break that second phase, I think, you know, for us, that was around the, you know, 150 people mark, you know, getting into kind of that 8-figure range revenue. That's where we really had challenges scaling the business because, you know, you start to run into the need to automate things, the need to actually have better data and information, the need to have better compensation plans, for example, to attract the type of talent you need as you scale, right? And the generalists that you had in those first two phases tend to break here, you know? And so the HR manager or the finance associate may not have experience doing those things. You know, the IT manager may not have experience kind of producing data analytics or data insights, right? So I think this is the phase where you need to think about, you know, what is, again, core to my business? What do I have the dollars to spend? And then thinking about getting leaders into those functions that can really kind of drive those decisions and drive the depth that you need to get to in each of those functions. So for us, for example, as a field business where we have people out in the field doing things that affect kind of brands that we represent, we did need a strong data function and we didn't have that, right? So it was really hard for us to tell the story to our brands and equip our managers with information to make decisions when we started to kind of represent upwards of 100 brands and upwards of 100 people. We couldn't anymore do manual kind of reports. It took too much time. So for us, we needed to bring in a tech leader who had the experience of building out a data infrastructure. And we couldn't do that with a generalist anymore. So, you know, really long-winded way of saying kind of how do you prioritize for your business coming from first principles of what kind of departments matter for you? And then second, really, what are the phases of that journey and how do you layer in those specialists as opposed to generalists as you grow?
You know, one thing that we often see with small businesses is, and something that's come up very recently, I would say probably since the early days of the COVID pandemic, is fractional C-suite roles, right? So we hear of fractional CFOs, fractional CMOs, fractional chief product officers. You know, we see small businesses really take advantage of this opportunity. But one thing that, you know, I've seen in my own experience is it's much rarer to see fractional chief procurement officers or fractional chief supply chain officers. Any experience with this? Do you have any theories on why that may be the case?
Yeah, I definitely do. I don't have a ton of experience in working with fractional executives. We didn't go that route. What I will say is we brought on some HR services. They weren't kind of a fractional HR leader, but they were kind of a fractional HR our department. So I have experience with that. And then I definitely do have, some theories on why people don't necessarily go into the procurement or supply chain space. So I'll start with kind of fractional executives. For me, I think fractional business models are excellent. I think it solves a real need in the market. And, you know, just to be honest, and I have somewhat of a bias here, Dirty Hands, my business, kind of is a fractional sales team, a fractional merchandising team out in the market, right? So my theory behind fractional work is that it really allows companies to have the expertise without breaking the bank. And that's huge for startups. So I think, you know, my experience with fractional services or executives is that you really need to understand, again, what information you need and what expertise you need and make decisions around, is the fractional services or executives going to be able to do that for you? For us, HR worked for a short period of time. For example, we were able to get in things like handbook. We were able to kind of do an assessment of the laws across the board. But you do reach a breaking point where it's, okay, this function, the HR function, is really critical to really accelerate. And it's hard to do that with a fractional executive who isn't as invested in the business. So I think you do need to think about what are your short-term needs versus what are your long-term needs to make a decision on when you could use fractional, then when do you need to actually move into somebody who's more permanent. I think on the procurement and supply chain side, I would have a couple of theories there. And I think the first would be, they're less known, right? I think procurement and supply chain kind of get pushed to the back of the cart because they're not as sexy, to be honest, in title. I think everybody knows marketing and sales, and those things drive revenue, right? And everybody knows technology and finance because those are kind of core to the infrastructure of a business. People know that they have needs in procurement and supply chain, but it just tends to be less on the priority list because it's less prevalent out there today to see those chief positions. It doesn't mean that's right. It does, you know what I mean? I think it does depend on your business, but I would say it's less known and less sexy of a department. And therefore, I think it sometimes gets less prioritized. You know, what I would also say is, a lot of brands or companies that are smaller, there isn't as many dollars in that procurement or supply chain space early on. If you just don't have the volume or revenue or kind of depth or distribution of for your business, you may not have the opportunities to really justify a chief level position at that scale. And so that's where I think, again, to your question earlier, a fractional executive could be a good option for you to still get expertise. I would say as you scale up, there becomes a lot of opportunity to kind of find cost savings, to find efficiencies in your supply chain and procurement space, which really does allow you to justify that. You can find six figures, seven figures in kind of savings or efficiencies as you grow. And therefore, I think bringing on somebody in that space is more relevant at that time, more in a full-time capacity.
What opportunities in operations or supply chain management do you consistently see across startup brands?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and it's very frequent, honestly. And kind of to your earlier question, it's often not really invested in deep enough from my experience. You know, we work with about 150 plus brands. And so we get a look under the hood into those businesses. And generally the messiest spaces is in supply chain and procurement, right? And I think that there is a massive opportunity there for brands that are willing to kind of unearth those opportunities and or problems. I would say the first is in unit economics for brands. You know, this is something that I'm personally speaking to an expert about on a webinar actually tomorrow, but unit economics is huge for any small business, for any brand that's looking to grow. It really determines, you know, are they going to be profitable as they grow? Are they going to be able to meet the price demands of the shopper? And yet it often does get underinvested in. It's kind of, hey, let's scrap together these puzzle pieces and just put something into the market. And ultimately that sometimes works, but a lot of the times you find yourself just burning cash or running out of cash or not fulfilling the demands of the shopper from a price point perspective. So I think one of the big opportunities in that space in procurement and supply chain is really starting to understand your unit economics and how do you optimize those? How do you find cheaper ingredients? How do you find cheaper vendors? And again, I shouldn't use the term cheap because cheap kind of means maybe not quality. But if you can understand that and work at a small scale, and then you start to push volume, the savings can be enormous. Again, like I mentioned, it could be 5 figures, 6 figures, and even 7 figures as you scale your business. And the second part of that is if you're not optimized on price point when you hit the shelf, you can have a really hard time competing with the other people in your category. So I would say that's one of the biggest opportunities for brands that I see is really getting in there and understanding their unit economics and how the components of those unit economics come together and where you can find efficiency and value in those components to get you kind of down on your price point and really help your bottom line. Ultimately, helping your bottom line helps you invest cash to grow your business, right? So that it's a huge opportunity for brands to kind of think about that. The second place that I see a lot of problems is in is distribution for brands. It's getting to the shelf and it's getting, you know, ingredients as well into kind of these products, and then moving those products through the supply chain has been challenging, especially with COVID. You know, we see a couple of brands invest deeply here, and they're able to really find a ton of efficiency in getting products to shelf, which is awesome. The problem is if you don't invest here, you can really disrupt the front end, the revenue side of your business. So, for example, we'll see very often where, you know, a brand will have great traction, you know, at retail, and they have customers and the customers want the product, but then the product goes out of stock in the warehouse because maybe they didn't have somebody on the supply chain side who was close enough to how much product they needed to order, or was their distributor going to be able to get the product to the shelf in the time that they needed to. And so I think the supply chain not having that right can really disrupt the revenue and front end side of your business, which then affects your relationships with the vendors. You know, for example, if you have a rollout in a retailer and you can't get product to shelf, the retailer then trusts you less as a brand, right? So I think, you know, to kind of tie that into a bow, procurement is critical in terms of really understanding where do you find efficiency in your units, in getting products together and getting those to the shelf. And then the supply chain is critical in terms of really getting product to shelf in a sustainable manner. And making sure that your customers aren't getting disrupted with that. So we see that a ton. Brands tend to make mistakes there early on, and then, you know, they learn that lesson enough that they start to invest in it. But what I would say is if you really boil it down, making sure you understand your unit economics and optimizing those, and then making sure that you have no major disruptions in your supply chain is really important to develop trust with your customer and vendors.
Thank you so much, Dan. This was extremely insightful. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for being on this podcast, and all the very best as you continue to grow your business.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's been fun. And I hope the listeners enjoyed, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can get more information on today's episode in the show notes or at source-refresh.com/podcast. To hear more episodes, please subscribe to the Source Refresh Small Business Supply Chain Podcast wherever you get your podcasts from.